The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. The wokists are all around us today, ladies and gentlemen, from Oxford University to our TV screens, from Wembley Stadium to the takeaway section of Kentucky Fried Chicken. When can we be rid of the snowflake generation that can't stand to watch football unless the players all make some kind of meaningless gesture before the kickoff? Why can't a fast food chain make an advert without it upsetting some people who think it plays into racial stereotypes? And why, oh why, have students at Oxford University voted to remove a portrait of the Queen from their common room because she represents recent colonial history? I mean, for heaven's sake, she's the head of state of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. She's hardly a despotic dictator that rules with an iron fist. They don't mind those, of course, do they? That's absolutely fine. The Magdalen College morons ought to take heed of what Lord Patton had to say. Freedom of speech allows even intelligent people to be offensive and obnoxiously ignorant. Now, before some of you get carried away and go, oh, what, do you want to cancel Oxford University students? No, I don't want to cancel them. I just wish to be critical of them because they are making complete and utter fools of themselves by claiming that one of the greatest heads of state that the world has ever seen, one of the most tolerant, one of the most generous, one of the most responsible, and one of the most admired people in the entire world, apparently, according to them, has got some colonial past that we don't like. Well, I'm sorry, absolute nonsense. We'll be checking in with Sun columnist Trevor Kavanagh first up this morning as we prepare you for yet another exciting edition of Prime Minister's Questions with Boris Johnson and the most unpopular leader of the Labour Party since the last leader of the Labour Party. 0344 499 1000. Coming up, we've got a packed show for you as well. Tonya Buxton is here with her take on the lockdown hokey-cokey and why she's had to cancel her trip abroad to see the family. Plus, Tory MP Deanna Davison is here to help us celebrate what should be Freedom Day on June 21st. And I'll be asking her about Andrew Lloyd Webber's threat to open his theatres on that day, come hell or high water. Surely the government wouldn't really arrest him for doing that, would they? Emma Webb is also here with her take on the cancel culture clashes that are going on all around us. And she'll have something to say about Gareth Southgate's rather pompous statement about England football and what it all means. 0344 499 1000. Loads of other stories going on. Doctors, of course, are claiming they're suffering from burnout. We'll find out why. Local residents are claiming they're being poisoned by a quarry in their community. It's all happening here on the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. So join us. You're listening to the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Now, there's so much going on this morning, I barely know where to begin, but thank goodness we've got a sage to talk to about all of the things that are in the papers today, and not that sort of sage, not the kind of sage that goes into the sage committee and tells everybody what to do, when to do it, who to do it with, and how often to do it, and what you can't do as well. It is Trevor Kavanagh, political columnist at The Sun. Trevor, very good morning to you.
Hi, Mike.
It is a little bit like being on the roller coaster of madness at the moment, isn't it? I mean, from the Oxford University students to Kentucky Fried Chicken being told that they've made the mistake by casting two black guys in an advert for fried chicken, you know, to Gareth Southgate, who's written a long and laborious and monotonous statement about why playing for England's so important without actually mentioning taking the knee, you know, the England Cricket Board. I mean, what's going on?
Well, listen, I can't improve on your opening words, Mike. It's amazing. I feel I'm going bonkers, and I'm absolutely sure nearly all of our listeners today will feel the same way. And yet we are cast adrift and cast aside while other people make the running on the most bizarre and amazing decision-making. Basically, it's censorship, isn't it? You can't have a view on anything these days.
No.
Writing a column, presenting a radio show, you're constantly taking a risk that someone will come down on you in a swarm of aggression and disapproval.
Right. And disgust, it's even worse than that, isn't it, sometimes? I mean, you know, you're now a racist if you don't support the England football team taking the knee. You're a racist if you don't think that Ollie Harrison should be, in fact, kicked out of the England cricket team. Robinson, rather. You know, I mean, it seems that we've now only got a situation in place where one view alone is allowed and nobody else can be dissenting from that.
Well, I think that the problem is, and I'm not sure if I can say this, you'll put me right, that the sort of attitudes that prevail now on racism actually exacerbates racism.
Yeah.
I think that people who are not racist and haven't thought about race in any sort of specific way are suddenly looking at it and wondering why on earth they should have things rammed down their throats. And if football crowds, who after all pay the tickets and pay the wages of all the people bending their knee on the pitch in against their particular approval. Where does it begin and end? Mm. You have, as you say, the Oxford students trying to bring down a portrait of the Queen of England. It just boggles. I'm lost for words,
yeah,
frankly.
I know. And the thing that I suppose amazes me the most, Trevor, is that, you know, it would be one thing if it was just students being students or, you know, activists being activists. But it's actually the establishment now which is buying into all of this. And it's the TV companies and it's the kind of, you know, the university administrations and it's companies, you know, commercial operations that are thinking that this is all great. You know, you've got Ben and Jerry's ice cream telling everyone that we must allow people to come here from France illegally on boats because we must be nice to them. You go and you sell ice cream. What are you talking about?
And the sainted National Health Service,
oh,
which
yes,
has got its own particular code of its alphabet of offences. I mean, this is grievance culture. This is salami slicing of the population and its views so that nobody can actually be on the right side of those who set themselves up as judge and jury, as moral police. And so you can't win this one. There's always something that you're on the wrong side of. And frankly, I think this is really much more dangerous than a bit of fun or stupidity. This is, as I say, I think it's an act of censorship so that we all have to watch our words on whatever subject we're discussing in a way that gags us. We can't actually ventilate. We cannot articulate the sort of views that we're entitled to have and entitled to express. Mm. And, you know, the Ollie Green's, the cricket... cricketers' words from 10 years ago, how long do you have to spend? I mean, you can serve less than 10 years for murder these days.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, Rod Little put it very well in his column in the Sunday Times, in which he said basically, well, not only now do you have to be careful what you say about certain things, but you have to be careful what you said about certain things before it was wrong to say them, before you even knew that it was wrong to say certain things. And that's the ridiculous aspect. I was quite pleased to see Gavin Williamson weighing in on Oxford University, and as I was pleased to see Oliver Dowden and Boris Johnson weighing in on the cricket and Ollie Robinson, because, you know, the politicians have to stand up for the majority of the people in this country, because I don't believe for a minute, Trevor, that these views are held by the majority of people in this country.
No, and I think that the political parties need to wake up to this. I mean, one of the reasons I suspect that Keir Starmer is wallowing in the opinion polls is because he voices and supports the very same things that we're talking about here. He is not standing up as Boris Johnson and Oliver Dowden are doing and saying this is ludicrous, it's madness, and we should stop it before it becomes impossible to stop. Mm. In fact, I think possibly it's got to that stage already. When you have the football associations remaining dumb while this huge controversy over bending the knee is tearing the game apart.
Yeah.
This is not going to go away. It's going to divide the game. This is not good for race relations at all.
No. And you know exactly what's going to happen in the opening game that England have against Croatia. The booing is going to be louder. It's going to be more vociferous. And more worryingly, and Martin Daubney and I were speaking about this a couple of days ago, if there's a situation in a pub where there's a big screen, people start booing the big screen, there's people out drinking, there's other people that think the people booing are in the wrong, you know, it could get all sorts of, it could go into all sorts of different places.
Well, I think this is the truth. And the problem is that we have, I think anyway, and of course there are some who deeply and bitterly disagree, have moved a long way on the issue of racism, especially in football and in crowd response to this subject. And I think that we are unraveling all that. We are undoing that because we're dividing people. We aren't bringing them together. The bending of the knee, which has nothing whatsoever to do with Britain or British racism or racial relationships at all, is now being used by people with the best of intentions, maybe, to bring about a situation where the crowds are actually booing their action. I mean, how obvious does that have to be, and how long will it take before the FA or the footballers themselves realise they're going to have to stop?
And also, how arrogant of Gareth Southgate to basically think that he can just preach to those people, more or less accusing them of being racist themselves, the people who support his own team and who support their own country playing football, and just sort of act as if they're idiots and that, you know, their opinions don't matter.
I agree. And I think that one of the problems is that to a very large extent, racism, as it would have been interpreted, say, as little as 5 or 10 or 15 years ago, has, I think, become almost passé in this country. We are much more tolerant. We live cheek by jowl with each other. We don't feel resentful in the way that we might have done a few years ago, and nor should we. But this is making people take sides. And that is exactly the opposite of harmonious race relations.
It is absolutely right.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. We're talking to Trevor Kavanagh, political columnist at The Sun. Trevor, you wrote this week something similar to what I've been saying, that the hokey-cokey policy, where you're sort of in halfway and out halfway in terms of lockdown, in terms of what happens on June 21st. I mean, what do you make, for example, this morning of Andrew Lloyd Webber saying that he's going to open his theatres come hell or high water on the 21st? And they'll have to come and arrest him if they want him not to.
Well, bravo to Andrew Lloyd Webber. I think I'd like to see many more people following this example, because somewhere along the line, we're going to have to make a stand as a country against a government and a committee of hybrid committee of various experts, modellers and epidemiologists who seem to be completely at odds with the facts as we know them from the Office of National Statistics about the spread of this disease. And, you know, I've been saying for some time that we're going to pay a heavy price for this lockdown, the two lockdowns, not just now, but in the long term. There's sort of cracks and fissures in our social and economic infrastructure are going to take a long time to heal.
Absolutely. I mean, we spoke to somebody yesterday on the show who has a wedding planned for, I think, June the 26th or the 28th. And if they put it back by 2 weeks, he'll have to cancel a wedding which has already been booked in a town hall, for which he's already ordered all sorts of food and drink, catering, a marquee in the back garden of his wife-to-be's parents' house. You know, people coming from all over to stay in hotels in the area. I mean, it'd be absolute chaos if they don't do it.
I agree. And that the story is echoed and reinforced across the country probably a million times. There are real casualties from lockdown, which aren't COVID, and they are big ones and there are small ones. So the small ones like weddings, which is, of course, big for the people involved, but also huge ones for people with really serious life-threatening illnesses, which are going either undiagnosed or untreated, and the mental health of the country. All for what? For a variant which is going to be replaced by another variant and then another variant afterwards, against which, as far as we know, all of our miraculous vaccines are proof.
Well, exactly right. And yesterday we looked at the... I'm glad to see that the Telegraph now publishes the average daily death figure for all causes, because yesterday I think it was 1,408, of which one death was from COVID. And you just think, well, there's something very wrong with this picture. Today's figures, average daily deaths, all causes, England and Wales, week 21, 1,375, of which 13 were from COVID. I mean, it's completely out of kilter, isn't it, with reality?
Yes, and as you will know, we have something like 600,000 deaths every year for various causes, no matter what. And anything more than that is regarded as excess deaths. We are now below the average, in fact, for the period we're in at the moment. Mm. And as we go through it, we're likely to end up in 10 years' time looking back and seeing virtually no peaks during this period, because what we're unfortunately seeing is a lot of people who would have died anyway during this last 18 months because of the comorbidities they were suffering from. It's a very sad story for those. It was inevitable, as it's inevitable to all of us, that we can't live forever.
But that's the point. And you know, the way the NHS is operating now as a kind of COVID-only service, they're now complaining that they're having to catch up with all the stuff they didn't do for a year. And that might overwhelm them as well. And I keep saying to them, well, surely you've now had a year to look at what's wrong with the NHS and why every single winter it falls into some kind of crisis. Why are they not fixing it? Why are they not doing anything to change the way it operates?
Absolutely true. And one of the other points that is not very well known is the fact that during the COVID pandemic, the government commandeered all the private hospital facilities in case they needed overspill capacity for COVID patients. So effectively, those private hospitals have not been keeping up with the sort of treatments and diagnoses that they would have done normally of the people now filling the hospitals and making life difficult for the NHS.
Yes. And I mean, I've just seen a picture which has been posted today of the outside of a doctor's surgery, in which it says the doors of this surgery are now locked. You may only visit to pick up a prescription between the hours of 10 and 11 o'clock on Thursday. At all other times, do not enter this building. And I'm going, sorry, this is a doctor's surgery we're talking about. They're basically telling people not to go in there because it's not open. And every time you speak to anybody from the BMA, they complain that it's the wrong narrative. Doctors are working as hard as ever. It's not true, is it?
I suspect it's not. And an awful lot of doctors are taking advantage of this. And not just doctors. I think people on furlough, I think all sorts of people have adapted to a different way of life in which basically they are subsidized and feather bedded, and there are jobs out there by the million because of a shortage of labor, because people have gone back to the European Union, and yet we are still paying people on furlough until September. I think that the NHS takes advantage of the fact, and some of the GPs too, that we have so much respect for the medical profession that they can do pretty much as they please. And while I'm absolutely certain that probably the majority of GPs are doing a very, very good job, there are people, as in every profession, who are malingerers, and they're shutting their doors to patients who I think are entitled to be able to go and see their local general practitioners.
Well, exactly right. Prime Minister's questions coming up finally, Trevor, today. Poor old Keir Starmer can't seem to win for losing, can he? I mean, he goes on Piers Morgan's Life Stories and becomes even less popular than when he was before he went on there.
Well, it's almost possible to imagine feeling sorry for the man.
But, almost.
I'm resisting that.
He's now he's apparently as unpopular as Jeremy Corbyn was.
Yes, it's almost astonishing that he can drop so low. But frankly, he's not making any impact anywhere on the political landscape. And this is actually not entirely his fault, believe it or not. He is trying to straddle a party which cannot be brought together. The two wings of the party are irreconcilable. You've got the far left, which is now dominant in the national executive, which is the power hub, and you have the moderate ex-Blairites, or still Blairites, who want to go back to the centre. There is no way that any leader, Andy Burnham, Yvette Cooper, whoever you want to put in the place, is going to reconcile that.
No. I mean, it's a shame for the population of the country, though, isn't it, in a way? Because we would quite like a decent opposition. I mean, it's not as if this government shouldn't be asked a lot of tough questions on a day like today. But as ever, it won't happen.
No, and I think you're absolutely right that a government, especially one like Boris, who enjoys untrammelled sort of power and popularity, is amazing at getting both in this particular situation, needs to be brought to book on certain important things, not least of which, for instance, is immigration.
Yeah.
What the hell is happening on immigration? No policy whatsoever for stopping the boats coming across, not effectively, and no policy whatsoever for repatriating the people who make it here. And I think that, you know, the issues that come up end up being the only opposition to the government is its own party, the members of Parliament, Tory MPs, who are fighting tooth and nail to stop us reducing the multi-billion pound payout that we make in overseas aid.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. I mean, that was another ridiculous thing, but we'll talk about that the next time. Trevor, great to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. Trevor Kavanagh there, a political columnist at The Sun, making the statement that I think we all know is the case, that Keir Starmer literally is about as useless as a chocolate teapot, I'm afraid. He can't do anything. He can't make any marks on the Prime Minister. He can't criticise the Prime Minister with any great deal of alacrity. He is literally losing every single round. If it was a boxing match, it would have been stopped by now. And even the Labour Party know that he's not the answer. So, however, they don't have an answer, and that is the problem.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Now, we've been talking an awful lot about GPs in particular on this show. We've been hearing from many people out there who say that they've had great service from their GPs, other people who say they haven't had great service from their GPs. There certainly seems to be a problem in certain pockets of the country where GP surgeries are quite hard to get into. As I say, I've seen a picture this morning of a sign outside one particular GP surgery saying, you know, basically, it's not open. The doors are locked. You can only come and get a prescription. Don't enter the building for any other reason. Let's talk to Dr. Martin Godfrey to find out what's going on. Martin, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
Not at all. I mean, obviously, it's ridiculous to try and make out that any one thing is ever happening in the NHS because it's such a huge organisation. But, I mean, some GP surgeries are operating normally, very well. People are happy with them. But there are others that don't seem to be quite delivering the service that they were delivering before the COVID pandemic. And of course, now we're starting to hear stories, which I think you're going to tell us as well, about burnout and people in the NHS working terribly hard. What is the picture and why is it so mixed?
I think that the general practice has changed beyond all proportion over the last 18 months. I mean, I'm sure that when you went to the practice before lockdown, you can remember sitting in a waiting room full of ill patients, often perhaps waiting for a doctor up to an hour, sometimes longer. And it wasn't necessarily a very pleasant experience.
It wasn't, no. In fact, I try and avoid it as much as I possibly can.
and then what happened was we went into lockdown and nobody could see the doctor for a while. And suddenly we all had to change to start having telephone consultations. And going online, which was always something I think that we'd been moving towards, but it suddenly accelerated the change. And that's meant that, interestingly, as lockdown began to work its way through and patients, more and more patients found themselves hitting two, I think, major issues. One was that their mental health for many, many patients was becoming almost impossible to bear. Mm. I can remember before lockdown in the average surgery, I might say 2, 3, 4 perhaps patients with anxiety and depression. But now I'm speaking to, I'd say, between a half and two thirds of patients who got quite serious problems.
Yeah.
And obviously it's not a sort of a couple of minutes, have some antibiotics. It's, you know, if somebody's saying, I'm going to commit suicide, then you need to perhaps spend half an hour or longer talking to them and helping them so that you can be satisfied that when you put the phone down, that that they are dealt with and happy and we can move on.
And are those people coming from all walks of life and all kind of age groups as well?
Yeah, it's just an incredible change, I think, for many people. There's a variety of different reasons for it. But I think if you had a disposition, for instance, to sometimes have low moods or be anxious, it's just exacerbated it incredibly to the point where people are just feeling they can't cope with their job, with going back to work, with problems with family members. And then it also there's a fallout to then the other services that are supporting these patients. Talking therapists, for instance, it should be the first line of management for somebody who has a mental health problem. Mm. And yet the talking therapies are completely underwater. They just can't cope with the numbers of people who are trying to make contact.
Yes. So, I mean, I was saying earlier, Martin, to Trevor Kavanagh, that, you know, we hear constantly that the NHS is overwhelmed in one area or another. Is it not for somebody to now look at what the NHS does, where it does best, where it doesn't do so well, where it needs improvement, where it needs more people, where it needs more money? It seems to me that, you know, every single year we have a crisis of some kind or another, but it doesn't ever seem to change.
No, I mean, I think it's interesting. You look back when the NHS was started, you know, there was the belief that once it got going, that most of the chronic disease would be sorted out and you'd just see the odd sore throat. And it's really so from the outset, I think there was a miscalculation or a misunderstanding of what level of disease and infirmity exists out there.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think, though, that we're moving into an exciting new world, which potentially we have the tools now to change the way that doctors and their patients and other healthcare professionals interact. You know, I think using the internet, particularly to be, I think, smarter about how we talk to each other. I mean, we now have the opportunity to offer more of a sort of smorgasbord of interactions with our patients. You know, certainly I think we need to move back to seeing more face-to-face patients, and that's certainly going to happen. but we're never going to go back to those packed waiting rooms.
Yeah. Although apparently at the moment there's a lot of packed A&E departments, because I was talking to a friend of mine this morning whose partner had to go to the doctor for something, but she was basically rerouted to the A&E department at Barnet Hospital, at which point they were so busy that they were rerouting people to the Royal Free and to UCL in the centre of London. So I think there's a bit of acrimony between A&E departments and doctors' surgeries, because so many people are being referred to the A&E where they would normally have just gone to the doctor's surgery.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that there's just this spillover of cases where we are all trying to do our bit in primary care, not to send patients up into accident emergency and to take the weight off the acute sector. But often, we are just so overloaded with these extra burdens of mental health problems, and also many patients who basically haven't been able to have their hip replacements, or their even serious problems like cancer care. We then have to deal with that much more complicated cases in general practice.
Yes.
And it just fills all the slots up, and then that comes back to the issue with doctors leaving. As we were you mentioned earlier, there's a recent poll I saw through a company called Visipa Care that there's something like 45% of staff considering leaving the NHS, and 52% of those who experience anxiety and worry about the future.
And where would they be going? Would they be going to private medicine, or would they be leaving altogether the medicine business?
A lot of them are leaving altogether. And, and I think that there is an opportunity now, particularly to use things like the internet to do things like remote consulting. Many patients want to see the doctor, but they don't necessarily want to go into that packed waiting room. Mm. And so the opportunity to have a video call with your doctor and be able to have sort of face-to-face, we can see the sort of non-verbal communications, etc. And I think that I think to some extent the worry is that there is the opportunity to use the internet more intelligently, but to some extent we've sort of come ground to a halt on that.
Yeah.
I think we need to grasp the opportunity to have both in hospital and in general practice more video consultations, more use of the internet, and then let us see the people who really, really need to be seen, and let us see them more effectively.
So who's going to make that decision, and who's going to be in charge of sort of reorganising everything? Because it seems to me that's what's needed, but again, nobody's really doing it.
Mm. I mean, there is a fairly fundamental reorganisation taking place within the NHS, and it's a sort of something of a quiet revolution. Not all doctors, I think, are supporting it, but there is a move, for instance, and I think this is absolutely a good thing, is an integration between health and social care, and I think that if we can get those two things working together more effectively, then many of the problems we see in practice aren't health problems, they're social problems. And if we can help an individual with their housing, with some of their just general exercise, diet, some of the fundamentals that are affecting their physical health, then hopefully we can get to a situation where again, we're focusing on the people who really need to be seen.
Yeah. I mean, on a slightly more philosophical note, and you may completely disagree with me, do you think that we've become a nation of people who are so reliant on services that people are less likely to take responsibility for their own health in a way, that they're kind of waiting to be told what to do, they're waiting to be told what to eat, how far to walk, when to get on a bike? You know what I mean? It's almost as though they've been kind of overeducated into not making their own decisions for themselves.
That's a very good point. I think that there is a societal issue. Britain particularly has a very paternalistic relationship with its healthcare system. And you compare the States, where, for instance, an individual sees that they have to take their own responsibility for their own care. Mm. And whereas we see the doctor as being the person who needs to look after us. And I think that it just isn't possible, to be honest, yes, for the healthcare system to deal with everything.
So maybe that needs to pivot slightly, because I lived in the States for about 10 years and they have a much more kind of proactive approach, if you like, yeah, to preventative medicine, and people yeah then take responsibility to keep themselves well. Whereas in this country, it seems to me, you go to the doctor when you're not well. Whereas in America, you sort of go when you're okay to check yourself out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the other interesting thing is, you know, you look at things like Fitbits. I mean, there seems to be a complete dichotomy. More and more people are now looking to buy a Fitbit, for instance. And yet, you know, the healthcare professionals, you know, why couldn't we prescribe a Fitbit, for instance? You know, there are a lot of commercial companies out there that are offering useful tools that can help with people's to keep people well. And I think that's important that we within the healthcare profession don't sort of look down their noses at that and help people to look after themselves.
Mm. Good stuff. Dr. Martin Godfrey, thank you very much indeed. 0344 499 1000 is the number. He's a South London GP. Making some reasonable points. I think we all know that there's something wrong with the NHS. You know, this idea that there's nothing wrong with the NHS, it's brilliant, you know, it's the envy of the world. Well, no, it's not actually the envy of the world. When it was looked at in comparison to lots of other envies of the world, other healthcare systems in the world, it came in at number 26. And nobody's copying it. Nobody does it the way we do it. And it just doesn't work very well.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. It is, of course, it's the home of common sense. Why wouldn't it be? Because there's not very much of it around anywhere else. I mean, some people are looking forward to PMQs today. I'll tell you who isn't looking forward to PMQs today. That'll be old Rodders, Sir Keir Starmer. Rodney, as he's now known, because he hates that name so much, I'm just going to keep calling him it. He's managed to make himself just as unpopular as Jeremy Corbyn. Despite being interviewed by Piers Morgan, his popularity has actually gone down. Extraordinary. So we thought, what can we do about that? What we should do is get Deanna Davidson in here, Conservative MP for Bishop Auckland, of course. She's been on the show many times. We finally got her into the studio. Deanna, very, very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good to see you, and thanks for having me in. It's
not at all.
Felt like a long time coming.
Isn't it a spectacular view? Have you seen out the window?
It's not bad, is it? Yeah, I've seen. Yeah, I can go with it. It's not a bad
place. I mean, the Tower of London over there, Tower Bridge over there. You can see the Shard if you look the other way out that way. I mean, it's absolutely
lovely.
Fantastic.
Whereas today, all I've got from my office is Steve Bray shouting about how corrupt the government is.
When is he going to give up, that guy?
When's he going to get a job?
I mean, who's funding him?
I would love to know.
Does anybody know?
I'd love to know.
He really is a ridiculous guy, isn't he? I mean, and he's actually quite objectionable. He's not. I mean, I don't mind the odd protester. You know, we all have to put up with people that don't like what we say and somehow don't agree with it. But he's quite an objectionable character, isn't he?
It's persistent. And, you know, I think part of the reason that I've come into the studio today is because from my office, the noise was so great that I think it would have disrupted any sort of interview from the office. So.
Well, yeah, it's a good
first
point.
World problems, obviously. But
yeah, well, no, but actually, you know, because actually it's a bit of an imposition on free speech in the end of the day, because, you know, he's trying to stop you from speaking, knowing that you might be wanting to speak to somebody. Then that, I think that's an arrestable offence.
I think it gets very nasty as well. I know when Jill Mortimer was elected and came into Parliament for the first time, we kind of gathered on the kind of green in the middle of Parliament. And they were all there at the gate shouting, yelling, being really abusive, really nasty. And you think, it's the poor girl's first day in Parliament.
Yeah, really.
Come on, let's give her a chance.
Yeah, and also, why are they so
not that Jill cared.
No, but also, why are they so vitriolic anyway?
What,
you know, what's the problem?
No, I completely agree with you.
Aside from most sort of... I mean, most people now have moved on. I mean, aside from the kind of the crazies, as I call them, like, you know, Lord Adonis and A.C. Grayling and Jolyon Maugham and all that lot. Most people who voted to remain have just gone, OK, all right, it's done now. Let's just move on and get on with it.
I think what it seems to be is the kind of real staunch, crazy Remainers, as you just sort of named them, they've just moved on to the next thing to protest about, it feels like. So now I think Steve Bray was out there talking about corruption, which he's been talking about for ages anyway. I mean, I think the whole Brexit sort of regime was corruption in his eyes anyway.
They just hate the Tories, don't they?
They do hate the Tories, but part of me thinks they need to get out there into the real world and talk to a regular working bloke up in the North East, yes, and ask him what his views are.
Well, this is how they got it all wrong, and this is how Starmer's got it all wrong, because he wakes up every morning thinking, who can I not disagree with this morning? I mean, there was a Labour MP on with Julia this morning, and she was asking her about the Oxford students. And while she was defensive of the Queen, she couldn't quite bring herself to actually denounce what the students had done, mm-hmm, which is obviously to have this picture of the Queen removed. And it's almost like a kind of cult. They can't bring themselves to be critical of anyone who might be either, you know, on the Black Lives Matter spectrum, mm-hmm, or who might decide that they hate, you know, anybody who's anti-trans, or, you know, they just can't bring themselves to have a sort of commonsensical position, mm-hmm, on anything.
Unless you're a Tory, in which case they will definitely disagree with you.
Then they hate you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, what about these Oxford students? I mean, it's Magdalen College. I don't know whether you went to Oxford or Cambridge. I didn't.
I was a reject, so clearly I'm going to have a very strong stance. No, I mean, you know, free speech, all of that. I guess they can decide what pictures they want up, blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, to get triggered by a very well-known portrait of the Queen, do they get triggered every time they receive a letter with a stamp on,
yes,
or spend a £20 note in a shop?
I know.
It's absolutely outrageous.
It really is. Well, these are the same people that will probably campaign to get her removed from the money, mm-hmm, and put somebody else on the thing. But, I mean, it'd be interesting to see what they get next, because they've said, basically, they want the room to be welcoming to people, mm-hmm, i.e. if the Queen's there, it's not welcoming somehow. So now they're going to find some piece of art which is from somebody inspirational. You can imagine what that's going to be.
So the Queen is not an inspirational figure.
Apparently,
you know,
not.
The longest serving monarch.
Yeah.
Basically, the shining light of freedom, democracy and British values. I mean,
yeah,
it's laughable.
And one of the most admired and revered women probably in the history of the world.
Yes.
Right? Because she's been a magnificent monarch. She's, mm-hmm, been a tremendous head of state. She's meeting Joe Biden this weekend. He'll be the 13th president, I, mm-hmm, think, that she's met.
Which we think is more than any other, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Well, she's reigned for longer than Queen Victoria,
yes,
now. I mean, how can you not have anything but admiration for her?
Even if you don't believe
even
in
if
the
you're
monarchy.
A Republican.
Precisely. Even if you don't believe in that, you cannot deny that the Queen has been an inspirational figure. Her sense of public duty, the decades of dedication,
yeah,
she's put into the job. I think if anything, I'm offended by the actions of the,
yeah,
Oxford students.
Exactly. I mean, of course they can do it, but they're idiots. I'm sorry. I mean, there's no other word
disagree.
For it. Let's talk a bit about June the 21st, because obviously that's the hot topic of conversation. The cabinet doesn't seem to be entirely sure what's going on. We keep getting mixed messages. One minute Matt Hancock says, you know, admissions to intensive care have gone down to practically nothing. But he then says we might consider actually lengthening the lockdown. Mm-hmm. We're not sure if we're going to keep it open on the 21st. What do you think's happening?
So I think all along we've said it's going to be led by the data,
yeah,
and that'll be assessed in sort of the week leading up to
the next stage
of the unlock.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, there is consistency there, but I think the problem is people ask all these many, many questions about what might happen, hypotheticals and all of this.
Mm.
But we've always said we're going to wait and assess the data. Now, we can see from the figures that case rates are rising, but what we need to see is if that's translating into hospitalisation rates,
right,
the death rate.
Which it doesn't
and
seem to be. Because
at
that's
the moment,
what, I mean,
no.
What Matt Hancock's also saying is that most of the people being admitted to hospital have not had the vaccine.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Which is very encouraging for, you know, the rapid pace of the vaccination programme. It shows we're certainly doing something right, that vaccine is working.
Yeah.
So I think we just need to wait, see what the kind of advice is. We always said it would be no earlier than June the 21st, so it could be there's a short delay. I wouldn't love it if there was.
No.
But I think we do have to be led by the data on this.
Then we do, but I think also they have to make sure that they're interpreting it right, because I
completely
think the trouble
agree.
Is, I mean, we've spoken to a lot of people this week. Tony Buxley was just in saying, you know, people have got things that they've planned to do now since the 21st was mentioned.
Yes.
Like a guy who rang me yesterday to say he was getting married on like the 28th, right? And he's going to have 80 people, but if they don't open, he can't do it. And
yes,
he's already booked the town hall. He's already booked the marquee. He's already booked the caterers. He's got all the booze bought. People are travelling from all over the country to come and stay in the area somewhere in Suffolk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that'll just wreak havoc with people.
Well, there are so many industries that have been so heavily affected by COVID. And even now, the hospitality industry still is struggling. There's still a lot of pubs that haven't been able to open because of the kind of social distancing restrictions.
Yeah.
We've got Andrew Lloyd Webber talking about theatres and how he's going to go ahead regardless. You know, I think we all
surely they wouldn't arrest him if he opened theatres.
I would hope not.
No.
I think he's a legend in his own
time,
right.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Imagine, you know, Andrew Lloyd Webber, you know, Tony Awards all over the place. You know, he's probably got a few Oscars up his sleeve. Mm-hmm. He's probably BAFTAs everywhere. And then he gets arrested for opening up a theatre.
I know, it would
I
be.
I mean, that's just not even on.
It would be quite something to behold, wouldn't it? But I think we need to wait and see. But obviously, I'm very much hoping we do completely reopen on the 21st. I think we need it. For our mentality as a nation, we need it.
Well, I think we do. And also, people need to go somewhere. I mean, the whole Portuguese business was a real blow, I think, to the travel industry. An awful lot of people who thought they might be able to book a holiday at some point towards the end of this month are now thinking, maybe we're just not going to bother. And people do need a break, I think. I certainly do.
I feel the same. I'm sort of banking on potentially more of a staycation this year. I mean, if I can get away, I may do. But I think the advice all along has been, you know, travel at your peril. We're not quite sure how it's going to work. Make sure you get those cancelable, flexible flights if you're
Yeah, but
if you're
when you see
them.
Spain is offering you to come there without even having to have had a vaccination or to prove that you're a negative test, you can just go. The problem is coming back.
Well, that is the problem. And that's where people need to take a little bit of personal responsibility, look at the guidance, follow it as closely as you can. But the problem is, this blooming virus changes things so quickly. If cases and hospitalizations are rising in a country that's on the green list, then, you know, as a nation, it's absolutely
right. Yeah,
but
surely if we've been vaccinated, what's the problem?
It's new variants, Mike, isn't it? I think that's the problem.
Yeah, but not one of these variants yet has shown there to be any problem with the vaccines. And most people who know about vaccines, and I'm not one of them, say it's easy to doctor it and to tweak it if necessary.
But I think it's the uncertainty, isn't it? It's not being certain. If there is a new variant, it could transmit
more quickly,
could be more deadly.
Yeah, but I'm worried that these sage people don't want any uncertainty. They want everything to be provable and everything's going to be great. And when you wake up in the morning, you're not going to hit your head on the door as you walk out. You're not going to drop your keys down a drain. You know, you're not going to slip on a banana skin and end up in hospital. You know, unfortunately, there are risks in life.
Of course,
there are. Some of us have to accept that and go, all right, we'll take the risk.
And that's exactly the same when you're booking your holiday. Take the risk of potentially losing the money if it does go onto the amber list or whatnot.
Okay, but let's talk a bit about your £33 million boost for Bishop Auckland.
Absolutely.
Because I noticed on your Twitter page that you've got a Towns Fund bid that you made. Now, this is all part of the Build Back Better or Levelling Up? Which of those two things
Is it? It's both, frankly. Yeah. I mean, it's more towards the government's sort of levelling up agenda. It's the second similar fund that's been available. There was a Future High Streets fund where Bishop got, I think, £18 million through that one, specifically for high street rejuvenation. Then the Towns Fund was for sort of wider works to try and improve the town. It can be used for transport infrastructure, heritage, digital infrastructure, all kinds of projects. We've submitted 10 projects in Bishop. We've been given funding for all 10. There's going to be some big changes on the high streets. We're doing a lot more work around our heritage zone. We've got a great company that run a thing called Kinren, which is a big kind of celebration of County Durham's history. And it's a big outdoor show that happens over the summer. So we're doing some work to try and kind of improve traffic flows around there and really improve Bishop Auckland as a visitor destination. So County Durham's a cracking part of the country.
Well,
so back onto the topic of holidays, if anyone does want a staycation, you know, some cracking places around County Durham that I could definitely recommend.
Head to Bishop Auckland. There you go. Well, Deanna, good to see you. Thank you very much indeed. Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. We've got a bit of a surprise for you coming up at 1 o'clock. Ian Collins is not here, but he's being substituted by Rob Rinder, a very, very big substitution here at Talk Radio. So we will look forward to seeing Rob coming up a little bit later on in the show. You're listening to me. This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. This is the home of common sense. Don't go anywhere.
The Drop Zone on Talk Radio with bonus drop from William Hill Vegas. Play for free. Your chance to win instant free spins, bonuses and up to £1,000 a day in cash. Visit williamhill.com. 18 plus begambleaware.org.
And now it's time for the Drop Zone with William Hill. I'm going to spin the dial and see where the penny drops on one of the three topics for today that will make up our discussions. First of all, how going to the pub while you're off sick from work isn't a sackable offence. And I will argue, well, we should all give it a go. I don't know about that. Rochelle Humes has banned her 8-year-old from having a TikTok account. I will argue that mothers know best. And finally, Glastonbury Festival will be replaced by individual performances live at Worthy Farm. And I will argue that it will be a great watch and that we should all tune in. Now, let us spin the penny to see which one of those I get. Well, luckily for me, it's fallen on Mothers Know Best, because Rochelle Humes has apparently told her husband that her 8-year-old cannot have a TikTok account. She's basically overruled him. His name's Marvin. She says, I have to play bad cop in our marriage. We were just talking about marriage because obviously Boris Johnson is on fine form, in fine fettle. And you might say that that is down to his latest marriage with Carrie Johnson, as she's now known. Carrie Simons, if you wish, which she was known as. But he certainly was firing all cylinders. He certainly looked like a man who was very happy. And I would certainly be more than happy to attest to the fact that mothers do know best. My own mother raised me very well. She was very much an influence in my life. My father was as well. But she was the one who, generally speaking, was the more sensible, shall we say, of the two. And with my own children, you know, mothers do have an overall control of them, and that's probably the way it should be. I mean, the fathers are out there, they influence their children, their sons, their daughters, they make sure that they love them, they make sure they raise them properly. But really, all of the kind of sensible decisions, generally speaking, are made by the mother. And I think that's entirely correct. I think that's entirely as it should be. And if it's not happening in your house, there must be something going wrong, because most women I know would rather be making those kind of decisions. And when it comes to something like TikTok, I don't think you want an 8-year-old having a social media account. I mean, it's bad enough when they want one when they're about 10 or 12, but certainly 8 years of age. I think Rochelle Humes has got it absolutely spot on. That was today's The Drop Zone with William Hill, Vegas. Play for your free daily chance to win instant free spins, bonuses, and up to £1,000 a day in cash. Visit williamhill.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
The Drop Zone on Talk Radio with Bonus Drop from William Hill Vegas. Get all the excitement of Vegas. Visit williamhill.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. Now, there's a story that's been doing the rounds for a while. We haven't touched upon it yet. Other people have in other pieces of the media. But we're going to talk now to Nathan Wint, who's from an organisation called Stop the Stink. This is because there's a quarry in Newcastle-under-Lyme, a place it's called Silverdale, which apparently stinks to high heaven. And nobody's really doing anything about it. Let's talk to Nathan now and find out what it's all about. Nathan, very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Mark. Thank you for having us on the show.
No, not at all. You are feeling very, very sort of fired up about all of this. Tell us, first of all, what it is that the problem is with this quarry, because it sounds horrendous.
It definitely is horrendous. So the problem is there's a landfill that's in a residential area. It doesn't just smell. It fills your home with gas, with hydrogen sulfide.
Right.
It makes you choke. It makes your eyes burn. We've had it constantly. It's got worse over the last year. Mm. It's affecting people's mental health, people's physical health. There's a young child that's had letters saying that it's making his health worse. It's making his health deteriorate. It's just awful. It's every day. Like today, it's a really hot day and we can't go outside because it absolutely stinks.
That's horrendous, isn't it? And what do the owners of the quarry say about it? Do they engage with the local community at all?
Not at all. Just recently, they've saying that they'd like to engage with people more. They're saying that they don't really know how to, and they've never really known how to. They're basically denying that the problem's coming from there. They're trying to blame everyone other than themselves.
Right. And what is it that it is causing the actual stink, do you think? I mean, is it a combination of things that are in the quarry? Is it some kind of chemical? What exactly do you think it is?
Personally, I think we've had evidence it's things that shouldn't be in there. It's a lot of things that shouldn't be in there. It's been dumped in there over a number of times. It's been poorly managed. It's been poorly regulated. And residents are suffering because of it.
Yeah. And what about the local council? Have they been involved at all? Because you'd think that they would have some kind of environmental health officer or somebody who would be concerned.
Yeah, so we've got air monitoring equipment around the area, which is... proved to be over a nuisance over a number of occasions. The council are doing quite a lot, actually. They're in the process of taking them to court, and they've issued them a notice of an abandonment. So they are helping, but it's just a very slow process. If things have been done many years ago, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in now.
No, of course. And how far does the smell kind of spread? I mean, how many people would you say are affected by it?
It's spread way over about 10 miles,
right.
10 miles away. It's been reported probably further afield.
Right.
It all depends on wind direction, which area gets it.
It sounds awful. And you yourself, Nathan, took a stand and made a one-man protest for which you actually got arrested, right?
I did, yeah. So I woke up one morning and it was... my children's bedroom. It was absolutely filled with landfill gas. I actually walked in the bedroom and it made me choke. Mm. And I just decided I'd had enough and I chained myself to the gates of the landfill. I stayed there for about 8 hours and then got arrested. But then the charges got dropped because it wasn't in the public interest to carry on with the charge.
And is the company that owns the quarry, are they local or are they somewhere else? Are they an international company? What sort of company are they?
Yes, they're a local company. They've been around for quite a while, but they took over the landfill site about 5 years ago, right. I think it was. And they've just not really had any help with it.
And is it since then that it started to get bad?
Since then, it's got a lot worse. They increased the wastage that they were allowed. They changed what kind of waste they were allowed to have.
Right.
And then since then, it's got worse, yeah.
Sounds incredible, doesn't it? I mean, you must be amazed that it's taking you this long to get it sorted.
Well, they've been issued penalties from the Environment Agency to sort things out, so they had to cap certain cells off and sort lots of things out, but it hasn't changed anything. The smell is still very much present.
Yeah. It's awful. Sounds absolutely horrendous. Well, listen, Nathan, I appreciate you coming on. Do keep in touch with us, and if there's anything we can do, we can maybe try and get hold of the owners or something and get them on and give them a grilling and see what the hell they think they're doing. But thank you very much for talking to us. Nathan Wint there from Stop the Stink campaign. Absolutely extraordinary story, this, because imagine living in those kind of conditions where you can't go outside, you can't open your windows in the summer. Your kids are getting, you know, watery eyes and feeling terrible because there's this ghastly sort of chemical smell hanging around in the air. It's just not right. I mean, this is the kind of thing that used to happen, you know, in the days of Chernobyl. And this is the kind of thing that used to happen in the days where there were no regulations on environmental wastage and what you could put into the ground and what you could put into a landfill. Surely somebody can sort this out. Surely, for heaven's sake.
Talk Radio. Across the UK. Online. On DAB. And on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham. On Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB, online, or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.